So when I was about 5 years old, I was shopping with my mom and my older sister. And I don't know about you, you know, there's certain things that we love. I still to this day love office supplies, and at the time I loved school supplies. So we were going down the aisle where there was just a rainbow of colors of markers. And my mom and my sister were chatting, and they were kind of getting ahead of me, and I slowed down just to, like, gaze at them all, and I began to really, really want one of those. And then I noticed that there was a red felt-tip pen on the floor. Now, I was wearing my love dress, and I remember exactly what that dress looked like. I wore it a lot. It was pink with a big white collar and a zipper, and one pocket said L-O in big letters, and the other pocket said V-E, so naturally I called it my love dress, right? And so I see this pen, and my little five-year-old brain rationalizes, it's on the floor. Nobody's around, it's on the floor, I have the power to make my own choice, mom's nowhere in sight. And so the pen goes in the love pocket, and I begin to walk. But I only get about two steps before this giant woman is looming over me, saying, can I have that back? And I said, what? What? Of course, I'm shaking inside, right? And then she says, that pen that's in your pocket. And I said, oh, this? I found it on the floor. And there was just that moment, like, I know and you know better, right? And she let me go with that, which was very kind. So as I skipped ahead to catch up with my mom and my sister, I had this, it was so visceral. I mean, 50 years later, I remember this so clearly. I had this mix of a little shame and so much relief. But really, what I left with that day was not a pen in my pocket, but an experience, a valuable experience that would feed me and help me and guide me in making choices throughout my life. And doesn't this happen for all of us? Last week, Ron Salazar was here. Give thanks for him on 24 hours notice. Yes. He showed up and gave a wonderful talk on the power of love, which was our third in the series. And so today we are on to wisdom. But before we zoom ahead to wisdom, I'm going to dance a little bit with love and wisdom because the two are so intertwined. So you can see why these two powers really need each other. Like, for example, in my story, I really, really, really wanted that pen, right? So part of love is desire, the things that we desire. But we need wisdom to help us be guided to make good choices when we have that desire, right? And in a similar way, when just wisdom is present with no love, it can be kind of cold and empty, right? Love brings warmth to wisdom. So these two powers really work together. Wisdom, as I mentioned, is in the pit of the stomach, and love is located behind the heart. All of these 12 powers of humankind that we're talking about that are unity teachings have these locations as well as colors associated with them. And so this divine love deep behind the back of the heart is where it's located. And the pit of the stomach makes sense, right? The gut feeling that we get. Those gut feelings, it told me when I was shoplifting, uh-oh, right? I had that drop in the stomach feeling, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. We all know that feeling, don't we? Is there anybody here who's never had that feeling? So that tells us something, right? It gives us something, a sense of the feeling that is present and sort of that sometimes it's fight or flight or more than that, how we might connect and meet and deal with whatever it is that's coming in our space that's causing that feeling. So wisdom is spoken of so beautifully and so poetically in the book of Proverbs. In fact, it's often known as Sophia as well, and it's the feminine voice that wisdom speaks, both of what she is and how important it is to have wisdom. So this is how it goes, a few of the poetic excerpts. And these are just a few excerpts. It goes on and on. Wisdom cries out in the street. In the squares, she raises her voice. At the crossroads, she takes a stand. At the city gates, she speaks. How long will you love being so ignorant? Hear my instruction and be wise and do not neglect it. Keep my teachings as the apple of your eye. Bind them on your fingers. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Blessed is the one who finds wisdom. She is more precious than jewels, and nothing that we can desire can compare with her. Long life is in her right hand, and riches and honor are in her left. Her ways are pleasant ways, and all her paths are peace. Wisdom is sweet to your soul. Say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call insight your intimate friend. Happy is the one who listens to me, watching daily at my gates. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? I want a little more of this wisdom thing, don't you? But wisdom, what is it then? So what is this thing we call wisdom? A lot of times we confuse it with knowledge. So knowledge is basically what is added to us, right? It's what we learn, it's information, and it's really processed in the intellect. So knowledge is really something that we expand in the intellect. It's a good thing, it's just not exactly wisdom. Wisdom is more the innate knowing inside of us that gets honed through our experiences. It's, as I mentioned, it's not located in the brain, it's located in the gut. It's a whole body experience, wisdom. How we gain it, how we access it, how we feel it, how we come to know it, and how we become it, how we express it. As comedian Jeff Foxworthy says, wisdom equals knowledge plus scars. Or as British journalist Miles Kingston makes this clear distinction between the two by saying, knowledge is knowing that a tomato is a fruit, and wisdom is knowing not to put tomatoes in your fruit salad. That one, I love these kinds of statements that make it really clear, right? In New Thought, we often teach in a method we call the Socratic teaching method. And that literally does come from the way that Socrates taught. And so the idea is that it's a belief that there is a wisdom within all of us, and the teacher's job is just to draw it forth. And in unity, we often consider all of us sort of teachers to one another, so we draw forth that wisdom with one another. And I got a chuckle out of Lena St. Michael, who was in our Unity Basics class a couple of weeks ago. And she said that when she first came into New Thought, she's been involved in religious science and agape, which are other forms of New Thought beyond, in addition to Unity. And she said she came into class and she kept waiting for class to start. And it was, 5 minutes in, and all the participants were discussing and talking, and it was 10 minutes in. And, she kept looking at her watch thinking, when's the teacher going to get things going here? 45 minutes into class, she realized that is the class. So it is through the sharing of our own ideas that we learn, right? And we all probably know from firsthand experience that when we are asked to go within and to discover our own thoughts, our own feelings, and put something in our own words, that it leaves a much more lasting impression than if we just hear it from somebody else in their words. And so it's not to say that there isn't a place for that kind of learning and that kind of knowledge. It's just that wisdom really gets tapped from the within, from the experience, once again. A wise teacher will sometimes hold back and allow somebody, give somebody else the space, even though they may know the answer to the question that's been asked. They wait for the person to explore within themselves. I remember having a student that didn't like this style at all at Unity in Columbia, where I used to be the minister. And she would just get so aggravated. She's like, but I came here because I want you to tell me the answer, you know. And so it was that kind of, you know, so sometimes I would say what I thought, you know, but there was that frustration of I want you, the so-called expert, to pour the information into me so I can leave and know what I need to know, you know. So there's a dance there that can happen, right, between knowledge and wisdom. But we now, you know, get a little bit maybe more of that flavor of the distinction. So love and wisdom, as I mentioned before, are interrelated. And in the powers, they are represented by disciples and also women of the chalice, women of the Bible. And so in the case of love and wisdom, we have another set of brothers, James and John. James represents wisdom, and John represents love. And Salome is their mother. So Salome is the woman of the chalice who also represents wisdom in this case. And so in the Bible, it's really interesting because these people who are supposed to represent the power, it's not like they come in with it. Well, I mean, we all come in with it, right? But you don't see it really demonstrated initially. The whole idea is that they evolve into that power. Just like us, right? So over time, we develop that understanding. So James and John, of all people, you know, these guys are rough-hewn fishermen. They probably swear like sailors. You know, they're the really rough, tough guys, you know, and they're forceful. They're aggressive. They show up in this demanding kind of way. For example, the disciples and Jesus go into a village, and they're not really made to feel welcome there, which is a big thing at those times because hospitality was a big deal. People were traveling a long way on foot, and it was expected that you would give good hospitality. But for various reasons of prejudice and so on, they weren't warmly welcomed. And John and James were so angry that they begged Jesus to pray so that fire would rain down upon the village and destroy everybody in it. So Jesus lovingly nicknamed them the Sons of Thunder. On another occasion, they knelt at Jesus' feet. It was terrible timing. I mean, Jesus is trying to tell everybody that he's not going to be with them very long. And they're quick to kneel beside him and say, allow us to be on your left hand and your right hand when you rule the kingdom, you know? And then similarly, Salome, who was also a follower of Jesus, James and John's mother, comes to Jesus and asks the same thing. Let my sons be at your left and your right hand as rulers helping you in the kingdom. And Jesus is like, oh, no, you guys don't get it. Let me explain a little bit more about what this means. Because what you're not really understanding what true power is. A true power, true leadership, or if you want to call it rulership, which isn't what he was calling it, is being of service. So it's not the ways that you're thinking. I'm wondering if maybe he named the boys Sons of Thunder because of Salome, because I think they came by it honestly, you know, this sort of forcefulness. But so they recognize, or hopefully they recognize in time, because we see over time, John becomes the beloved disciple, right? He grows into love. And so there is this sense of shift that happens. So what is Jesus saying when he says a true teacher or leader, a true power is about service? He's really saying that it's about what would be included in that are things like humility, right? He's pointing to humility. And he's also pointing to wisdom in the terms of spiritual discernment. And so let's take these two aspects of wisdom and break them down for a minute. Humility, this aspect of wisdom. Because sometimes when we think of somebody wise, we think of like kind of a regalness, right? But wisdom is also, and it can have regalness, but it also has humility, maybe more so than anything. There's a sense of humble, wrapped into somebody who is wise. Some things that a wise person might be willing to say or might say is, I was wrong, or I apologize, or I don't know, or I need help, I'm listening, I'm willing to change and to grow and to let go. All of these things are honest statements of somebody who has wisdom, a sense there's also some sense of faith in there, some sense of a confident knowing that I can be vulnerable, I can be open, I can not know, because it's in my not knowing that I leave space for Spirit, right? It's in the not knowing that we receive. And so it's through the practice of humility that we are reflective and we are open and we are willing and we are listening. It's all of these humble ways that actually lead us to a greater experience of sageness or wisdom. The Buddhist monk Ajahn Chah says, "You have so many opinions and you suffer so much from them. Why not just let them go?" Makes it sound so easy, right? But it's that clinging to, I know, I've got the right answer, I've got the information, I am smart, I am intellectual, all those things that sort of close us down to being like a beginner's mind, an I don't know mind, a willing mind to learn and to listen and to grow. And it is through that that we really attain the kind of power of wisdom, that we touch it and activate in the way that we're talking about. So we could say in our silent times to ourselves, or even begin our day with, I don't know, teach me, Divine Presence. Try that out and see what kind of day you have, to sit in the silence for a few moments and then say, begin your day, I don't know, teach me, Divine Presence. And then pay attention, reflect on what comes your way throughout the day. Truly, we can say then, I learn something new every day. So this power of wisdom is sometimes even called the power of discernment or the power of judgment. And there is this wonderful wise fool that I like to draw upon when considering these kinds of things, this shade of any kind of wisdom, but especially discernment. And it's Nasruddin. You've probably heard me speak of him, or you've heard other people tell stories of Nasruddin, who comes out of the Sufi tradition. He often shows up as the wise fool. And so in this particular story comes from The Beggar, the King, and the Secret of Happiness. It's a book by Joel Ben Izzy, and he tells this story of Nasruddin. There was a devotee and he of Nasruddin who really wanted to find this master and ask him this question that was burning in his heart. And so he looked for him for years, and he finally came upon him in a marketplace sitting on top of a pile of banana peels. Nobody knows why. And he says, "Oh, great teacher, I have been looking for you. I have this question, and the question that burns in my heart is one that burns in everybody's heart. So please answer me. What is the secret to attaining happiness?" And Nasruddin thinks for a while on his banana peels, and he thinks for a while more. And then he says, "Good judgment." And the student says, "Ah, but how do we get good judgment?" And Nasruddin says, "Experience." And so the student says, "Yes, but how do we obtain experience?" And Nasruddin says, "Bad judgment." Seriously, it's true, isn't it? We all laugh because we know it's true. That's how we learn, through our experiences. And I actually do want to talk to you about something pretty serious, because I feel that it's there's an opportunity for something to arise right now that we don't want to arise, that would be poor judgment. And that is that, first I'm going to start with this, we are social beings, right? Human beings are social beings. I mean, even if we're introverted, we are social beings. And as unitics, sometimes that's even ramped up more, right? There's a lot of people in unity that are very social. Not all, but many people are social. And we're coming out of this pandemic where a lot of people have been isolated. So that burning desire inside to connect, to make friends, to reconnect with old friends, all of that is really heightened. And so there may be a temptation to hotwire our connections, but we don't want to do that. That is would be bad judgment. So let's take a look. This comes from the social scientist, the researcher, Brené Brown, where she talks about this idea of hotwiring connection. Let's take a look at this video.
What I share with you, you will hold in confidence. What you share with me, I will hold in confidence. But you know what we don't understand? And this came up over and over again in the research. We don't understand the other side of the vault. That's only one door on the vault. Here's where we lose trust with people. If a good friend comes up to me and says, "Oh my God, did you hear about Caroline? They're getting a divorce and it is ugly. I'm pretty sure her partner's cheating." You have just shared something with me that was not yours to share. And now my trust for you, even though you're gossiping and giving me the juice, now my trust for you is completely diminished. Does that make sense? So the vault is not just about the fact that you hold my confidences. It's that in our relationship, I see that you acknowledge confidentiality. Here's the tricky thing about the vault. A lot of times, we share things that are not ours to share as a way to hotwire connection with a friend, right? If you don't have anything nice to say, come sit next to me. You know, that's our, yes or no, like our closeness is built on talking bad about other people. You know what I call that? Common enemy intimacy. What we have is not real. The intimacy we have is built on hating the same people. And that's counterfeit. That's counterfeit trust. That's not real.
Take that in. Yeah, some direct teachings on this idea, right? That, you know, why would we, and to bring it into some compassion, why would we gossip about others and judge others? Because we have a need for connection. And we're looking for a fast way to get that need met, right? That's this idea of common enemy intimacy and hotwiring connection. And always we can come back to the truth of our powers, love and wisdom, what better powers to teach us about true friendship and true connection. Because it is through getting to know people, and there's no fast lane to that, right? We get to know people over time. We get to know people after having experiences together, after listening and sharing and going through things and supporting and encouraging and allowing. And so just giving some spaciousness to that, to recognize that trying to jump over isn't going to serve us. And in our need and in our desire to reunite at unity, I hope that we will really take this to heart and stay with the path of wisdom, to make the wise choices as we connect, and connect in joy and connect in true friendship. So those meaningful connections and the upliftment that connections can bring are here for us. It's here for us. We have an amazing community. So let's allow ourselves to rebuild in such a way that we really formulate those bonds in a strong and trusting way and welcome in new people to a place that really holds that in our hearts and in our guts. So when in doubt, we can ask ourselves, is this mine to share? Or we can ask ourselves, what is my motivation for wanting to share this information right now or wanting to make this judgment right now? And we might recognize that there's an innate need that we have. And perhaps we could stop ourselves and ask, how could I get this need met for connection, for friendship, for love, whatever it is that we're seeking in that moment? And how might I make a truer connection? And so we can, you know, just a little self-reflection, or even just stopping ourselves after we've done something that we realize, oh, that didn't feel very good. You know, sometimes I'll be having a conversation with Brenly, you know, usually with our partners, we just give each other freedom, right? To just say whatever's on our minds and hearts for the most part, unless it's about that person, then it's a little bit, you know, softer shoe. And sometimes I'll just stop. You know, yesterday I stopped myself in the mid-sentence and she said, "What?" And I said, "Nah, I don't want to say that." You know, just realize, like, I don't want to put energy into the world in the spirit of venting that is creating ickiness, you know? So it's just like some things are just, we can just have it within ourselves and find a healthy way to let it go, and we don't have to speak it into being and amplify that kind of energy that we don't want in the world. So it's that process of self-reflection, or as conventional wisdom would say, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. Sometimes conventional wisdom really has something available for us, right, that reminds us. And if you notice someone else going down this slippery slope, this might get a little harder because it might feel sort of righteous, right, to step in and to say something, but maybe you can find a way that's gentle enough, like, oh, you know, on Sunday there was a talk around this topic, and I would love for us to see that together and talk about it, or, you know, whatever it may be. Quote Brené Brown or send a link, you know, so it doesn't have to just be, well, I don't ever do that, you know. that goes over about like a lead balloon, right? So finding ways that we can help each other without it feeling diminutive in any way. You know, proverbial wisdom says, say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call insight your intimate friend. And so this insight, this idea of intuition, is certainly a key part of wisdom, isn't it? It's what we think of when we think of the gut, right? Having a gut feeling. And so intuition is following our innate guidance, trusting that we have that, and trusting the body's wisdom to show us and to allow us through sensation to know what it is that we need, whether it be emotional, mental, or physical. So it's that in this nerve center that connects the love power and the wisdom power is behind all this, behind the heart and the gut. There's this ganglionic nerve center that is actually, it's really packed full of nerves, right? And it's part of the automatic nervous system, which means that it's part of the unconscious. So there's this, it's more the gut feeling, right? And then it becomes conscious, right? So it's the wisdom that comes out of the body and then becomes mentally conscious for us. So this is a part of it. Sometimes it's called, this area is called the body's brain or the second brain. So if you think about, so often we're so focused on the intellectualism and the knowledge and the information as the brain, but this work is sending us to the body's brain, to the second brain, to really heed that. So our spiritual work is to trust the body's wisdom. You know, the body speaks to us all the time, doesn't it? It's a little, you know, I'm a little tight, I'm a little uncomfortable or comfortable. I feel really open today, or I feel kind of constricted, I have pain. You know, so allowing ourselves to go into dialogue a bit with what the body is trying to tell us can really lead to some powerful insight. Happy is the one who listens to me, wisdom says, watching daily at my gates, speaking to the daily practices of things like prayer and meditation, perhaps yoga or martial arts or whatever it is that you do that grounds you and that allows you to feel the presence of the divine and to access some of that wisdom that is available to us, those insights and ahas that are available to us, or simple guidance for our day. Wisdom is often seen as divine light, and it's represented by the color bright yellow like the sun. So it's a reminder that the sun can be a reminder, you know, honoring the sun as it rises and as it goes to bed at night, to recognize that daylight and that space of the warmth of the sun is where everything gets revealed. It's where clarity is seen, where truth is known. So if there's two things that we could walk away with from today, it would be to remember the primary ways that we access this power of wisdom. First and foremost, of course, is this idea of going within, listening to spirit, trusting our innate knowing, our intuition, and trusting our bodies. And the second is to pay attention to and to engage fully in our life experience, because it is through our life experience, as we remain open and humble, that we will be willing, we can be taught by life, right? We can be taught by each other. We can be taught by the divine in ourselves and the divine in all of life. So for our affirmation today, the first statement is really this practice statement, and the second is more of a common affirmation, a statement of truth. Let's say these two together. I don't know, teach me today, divine presence. Divine wisdom guides me, and I follow its lead. And so it is.